Okay, so here is this Spider-Man figure that I got at the Dark Horse booth.
Wow, that looks very fragile. Can I see that for a second?
Sure, be careful.
Thank you very much.
I had to wait in line. Oh! I broke!
Oh, that's too bad. What else you got in your bag?
I have nothing to show you.
Well, just show it to me. I'll be very careful, I promise.
Well, I had to wait in line for a long time to get this Twilight special figure of Bella.
Hey, look at how easy your hair comes off.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's too bad. What else you got?
Nothing. That's all I got.
That bag is bulging, you Fibber McGee. Let me see.
No, give it back.
Oh, wait. You won't be needing this anymore.
No.
And you won't need this anymore.
No.
And I think we're all done with this, too. That'll teach you for going somewhere without me, loser.
Looks like Rashi's back to his normal self again.
Yeah.
And here we are with the Comic-Con Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I found an equivalent to the pee booth. The pee in the pool. It's poop. It's a little cute poop.
Not funny. Pee only is funny. You can have all the poop you want.
Poop is funny.
I believe you, but not my pee. I forgot that pee was there.
Yeah, pee was there. Yeah.
You know what else
right
is there?
Right next to the Emily the Strange booth.
Kingdom of Loathing.
Oh yeah, Kingdom of Loathing is always there. She got a martini tattoo.
You have a tattoo of him?
The martini glass tattoo. And I got an accordion tattoo. And I got some stickers actually on this case somewhere.
Do you guys play Kingdom of Loathing?
I haven't yet, but I've 3 years ago I discovered it. I thought it was brilliant. I still haven't yet had a chance to play it, so I really want to.
I started it.
Every day. Every day. My name is Mystic Roni and Cheese. Because I'm a pasta mancer.
Nice. I started it.
Fifth Ascension. 5 times. 3 out of 5 where bees hate you. Oh, I love that game so much.
Wow.
You had no idea I liked it that much, did you?
Mm-mm.
And I wanted to meet those guys at Comic-Con. I didn't get to go.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you hurt your toe.
Because I was here with my broken toe.
Yeah.
But I had a lovely time with my son. Anyway.
All right, so some questions then.
Anything
else?
Nope.
Give me that. A nice time with Alan watching Batman Year One.
Oh yeah, there was that. We went to the Batman Year One screening. That was a lot of fun. That was kind of like old home week because I'd gone for dinner with Alan and his son Nick and Stan Berkowitz, and we trooped over afterwards to.
Wait, is this the dinner that Kevin and Mark Hamill were?
No,
at
this was dinner afterwards. I mean, this first one night we went to dinner with Mark and Kevin and Chip Kidd, which was wonderful.
I read about that on your tour. That sounds awesome.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, Chip Kidd, my dear friend,
and Mary Lou and Andrea Romano.
Oh yeah, and
tons
Rogerio, her
fun people.
Her
and Chip just had an announcement about writing a Batman comic too. I heard.
What's that?
Chip has announced a Batman comic.
Yes, he's writing
too,
a graphic novel
really nice.
where he, apparently he's the villain in it.
Yeah.
The villain is sort of based
villain.
On...
Yeah, it's a gay villain that's based on him, apparently.
I guess so.
Oh, God, he's so fabulous. Have you ever met Chip Kidd?
Oh, he's great.
No,
he's so deliciously dry. He's so smart, and he's so kind, and he's so good, but he's so impatient with people who are not as smart as him, and it's hysterical to watch, because he is so elegant, and he is... And I don't mean this, like... I mean, he is in a... Like a very... Like your mom, in a very... salt of the earth kind of elegant way. Like, his manners are just who he is. The courtesy is just part of who he is. But he's so smart that he just... Just in a look, this man, I hope they catch him in the comic, the looks that he gives and stuff, because we were with him one night, and he came over to our hotel room, and we were just talking, and there was somebody else there. I don't remember who it was. And the guy just said something kind of off the cuff, but it was really wrong, you know. Uh-huh. And you know, no malice or anything like that. But Chip just kind of looked at me and just kind of cocked his head and raised just a little bit of one eyebrow, like, "Are you getting this?" And it's just, I'm not being very articulate because you have to see it. I can't.
He's a dry martini in human form.
Oh, he's so fabulous.
But also, he's like he is what I would think epitomizes the classic.
He is a Batman villain.
Yes, right. Very.
That's what it is. He is a Batman villain.
He epitomizes what I'd say the the intellectual New Yorker literary person is.
Yes.
And he really associates, I think, with the cream of New York Literary Society.
Yes.
But I think he's got this secret identity where he's down with us comic book filth. And that's the underworld that he associates with. And because, you know, we'll be in New York and he'll be going to the opera or, you know, readings or something like that. But then again, he likes...
And then he's hanging out with the SNL guys.
And then, oh, yeah, the SNL guys. And then, you know, at dinner with us and there's the animation guys. But, you know, he does all those great... He designed the cover for Jurassic Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. The book and cover. And just in case anybody's not familiar, he wrote the Batman animated series book, right?
Yes. We co-wrote that together. And he wrote... he's written some wonderful books on his own. And he also does all the... jacket designs for David Sedaris' books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Or for a lot of them.
Can you tell how much I love this man?
Yeah, totally.
I love him so much. I just think he's so fabulous.
And he missed you, too.
Oh, I missed him. Oh, my God. Oh, I have to go to New York.
But he had never met Kevin Conroy before, and I was very happy.
I asked him if the universe exploded a little bit when they shook hands, and he said, yes, they did.
And he
also wrote Bat Manga. Chipped
Okay. Oh, and Super Manga coming next year.
Ooh, busy guy.
Very, very much.
I remember. You know what Chip Kidd owns? He owns
everything.
Well, yes, there's that. But what was it that he had bound in glass and leather? What was that issue? You were drooling over it.
Was it the original art from something?
It was the original art, and I'm trying to remember what the book was. He bought pages 1 through 22 of this book, and...
I can't remember.
Oh, my gosh. And he had them bound in glass. The pages are bound in glass, but it's still a book.
It's probably a good thing we can't remember because we don't want people knowing that he's got it.
No, that's true.
But I remember one time...
But I just remember Paul going, oh, because he was showing us pictures. Mm-hmm. But the binding was drool-worthy. He's just elegant.
I remember one time he was...
In a masculine way, too. He's just like a... He's fabulous.
I remember he's got a wonderful penthouse in New York and a spectacular Batman collection all under glass. And I remember years ago, Bruce Timm was cleaning off a bunch of things from his desk and he had this ashtray. It was a Batman ashtray and it's Batman standing there with a little, you know, like a round dish for your cigarettes and everything. And it was stained black and, you know, with you know, dozens of years of cigarette smoke in it and everything. And Bruce was throwing it away, and I said, you're really throwing that away? And he goes, yeah, I don't want it anymore. And I said, can I have it? I think I know somebody who would like that. And he goes, sure, fine. And so I took it, and I scrubbed it out, and that took some doing. And then but I got it, you know, nice and clean. And then I called Chip, and I said, hey, you know that old ashtray Bruce Timm had on his desk? And Chip said, the Batman ashtray? I said, yeah, he was throwing it out. You want it? Yes. So I packed it up carefully and I sent it off to him, and now it's right in his glass mm-hmm. case. It's a proud collectible.
Mm-hmm.
I've sent him a few things over the years that he's never that is like the big thing. It's like when you can find a Batman thing that Chip Kidd does not have, it's like finding a record that Eddie Gordetsky doesn't have, mm-hmm. and giving a good one
because you can find something they don't have that they just didn't want.
Yeah.
But to find something that they couldn't find.
Yes, and
I remember
they wanted.
Eddie. We got Eddie something I wish we had gotten one for Chip. It's 1963 Batman membership club button.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We got him one, and Eddie didn't even have to finish. We wrapped it in a little box, and he just opened the side of the little CD width box. It was a very small box, and he goes, "I know exactly what this is. I had one of these when I was a little boy." And he knew by the colors on the side of the button. He said, you know when you have something when you're little?
Yeah.
And you examine every side of it. He goes, I know. And he just closed the box and he said, it's a 1963 Batman Club membership button. And Paul and I looked at each other and said, whoa.
Yeah.
And he said, I lost mine. And it was such an awesome, 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 awesome reaction. Like, you couldn't ask for anything better from a better friend. You know, it was just, we were like, zing, yeah!
The thing that always does it for me are, like, there are certain buttons with cartoon characters on them, but also, I have a collection of, they're up there, TV Tinykins, which were like little tiny plastic figures of Hanna-Barbera characters.
Mm-hmm.
And they came originally on, in little boxes that sort of simulated the show, whatever show they came from, like... Quick Draw McGraw had a Western box, and Huckleberry Hound had a little stage, and Yogi Bear had a little tree. And there's something, because I would get only a little bit of money every week, you know, when I was a kid, I would save up for them. And they were only like 29 cents or something like that. And it was always a big deal when I was able to buy one. And even now, when I find them somewhere, especially the little box, it just takes me back to that feeling of like, oh, I collected all of Top Cat's gang.
Choo-choo.
That was a big deal when I got Choo-choo. I had to wait a long time for Choo-choo and Spook. You know, I was going, brain. Oh, here's Benny. I already have Top Cat. Where's Choo-choo? You know, so got them all. Anyway. All right,
so let's read these, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a couple of questions. Should we wait for that awesome audio file?
Yeah, I think, here, let me put a dime in the your jukebox and let's get the music going.
Questions from the fans.
All right.
Chris Oatley asks, it's not a question, it's more of a statement. I'd love to hear any tips on breaking 22-minute episodes and writing good scenes.
Boy, when you find it, Slim, let me know. I can do that myself.
Benjamin, great help, Paul. Thank you for
answering. I don't know. It's a process. You go, you know, if you're working on staff or you're working with a story editor, a good story editor, you'll have somebody to bounce ideas off of. You'll go in with an idea and whatever it is, you know, a premise is usually a hook to base.
Do I explain what a premise is?
Premise is
basically... about a paragraph-long, summary of what you were thinking a good story for those characters would be. Can I just very quickly interject here, not because it's my business, but because I do know you and I've heard you say this before?
Yeah.
That one of the secrets to breaking a good story and to writing good scenes is knowing your characters and staying within their proclivities.
Proclivities?
Yes, their natural behavior.
Oh, right.
Know your characters inside and out, because we talked about this before, but your dialogue has a very specific song to every single character. They all have a cadence.
I mean, here's a little bit of advice for anybody looking to pitch to any show, live action or animated. The best thing you can do is come up with a story that involves your regulars only, your core characters, and look at a way you can reconfigure those characters in a way that some character sparks go off that the producers haven't thought of yet. The worst thing you can do is, you know, bringing in someone's wacky cousin George who everybody reacts to, or a new element into the show, because that way you're concentrating on the new element, you're not concentrating on the energy that is, you know,
inherent. It already exists.
Yeah, somebody came to me and they said, well, I want to do a Simpsons episode where Mr. Burns leaves the plant and somebody else takes over. It's like, unless that somebody is Bart or Marge, you're not going to have, you know, much of a story.
And they've already done it with Homer.
Yeah, and, you know, come up with a Marge Homer story or a Homer Lisa story or something where the energy is contained in the family unit. You know, then, you know, it's a more satisfying story.
Well, and not only that, but it shows the producers that you can write, you can play
you can
with,
really
the,
know the
with
characters.
Their toys.
Yeah.
You know, instead of bringing your own toy along and letting them play with your toy for a day, you don't, you know, it's almost like an injection of ego to bring in a brand new character instead of just, as you said, telling a really good story with the dynamic that they've already established. Because if you want a staff job, you can't be introducing a new character every week.
Yeah.
And they don't want to see that. They want to see how well you know what they've created. And...
yeah, I mean, it's the same in comics. Everybody who's getting into comics wants to write the big, the ultimate Batman fights the Joker story, or the death of Batman story, or the death of Commissioner Gordon story, or whatever.
But those are events. Those aren't stories.
I know, but, you know, it's more like, I'm more impressed with somebody who can write a good detective story and have Batman, you know, have Batman be one step ahead of me as the reader, and so the ending is a complete surprise to me, though not necessarily to Batman, because... if you show how he figured it out before the reader did. You know, it's a skill. It takes a lot of practice to do it.
All right, you got a lot of them here,
okay,
so let's buzz through them. Benjamin Vigneault says, hey, can you tell us anything about the dynamic between Batman and Catwoman in Arkham City, besides what we already know?
What
do you know, Benjamin?
It gets pretty hot.
Does it?
Yeah.
All right.
It's pretty good.
A Pope named Chuck asks, anything in the works with Dustin Nguyen? It's awesome when y'all are on a Batman book together. I agree.
I agree too, and we've talked about it, and I think it's more of a matter of, me personally, I'm kind of looking, after Arkham City is all wrapped, I'm looking at taking a break, a little vacation from monthly comics just to concentrate on some other things, but Dustin and I keep talking about doing a graphic novel together, or maybe going back with a miniseries idea for DC. Again, a lot of it is just, I have to see how the Big 52 reboot shakes down. So I'm really not thinking about comics right now.
Okay.
What else we got?
Tam McLean wants to know, any news on Tower Prep?
No.
Okay.
Not yet. Not yet.
Don't take that away from me.
What's the rest of the question?
That's it. My kids and I loved watching it.
Oh, I did answer this online, actually, and I said, I thanked her for watching it with her kids, and I also suggested that perhaps she, as a parent, should write to Cartoon Network, send a letter in, and say that she and her entire family enjoy it. And I actually think, I'll throw that out to, if there are families out there who watch Tower Prep, moms and dads, write into Cartoon Network. They take a letter, a stamped letter, a lot more seriously than they do an email or a phone call. Just find out, find out the people who are in charge of programming. You can find out online, or you can just write, send a letter to Director of Programming, Cartoon Network in Atlanta, find the address online, and let them know. Because that was the thing I enjoyed most about last year's Comic-Con, was that families who had seen previews came up to me and said, I really look forward to watching this with my kids.
That's true.
And if they know that whole families are watching that, then I think that's a good sign for that.
Okay. Greg versus Zombies asks, will there be any more Arkham City info, and what are your thoughts on Harley's new look in Suicide Squad?
Well, again, I was asked this a lot. Harley's look, I haven't even seen the whole costume. I've seen sort of like a knee-up version of it. And, you know, it is pretty much a very revealing costume, but I'm going to have to see how it plays with her personality.
Okay.
I can't judge anything off the costume.
And how about any more Arkham City info? You just gave a lot.
I just gave a lot, yeah.
All right. The Silent G asks, don't know if you can answer this, but did you write the Spider-Ham episode of USM?
What Spider-Ham episode of USM?
Right. There was an issue of Spider-Ham Ultimate Spider-Man, but that was Straczynski. There wasn't.
There was a sneak peek. There was a sneak peek at the USM panel of something they shouldn't have seen, which was a model sheet that showed. That showed a little preview. But I'm going to be very cagey about it until that episode airs. But it was a lot of. But it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
I see.
All right. David Earle asks, it says, never mind, Mark Hamill was misquoted, apparently. I don't know what
They printed these out of order. He asked a question about Mark Hamill.
Oh, I see. Dark Knight Wing 82, are you going to write any book of the DCNU? What do you think about the new Harley look, which you already answered? Personally, he prefers the old one. So are you going to write any DC relaunch books?
No.
All right. Jason Bachover, Nicholas says, how did you come up with Solomon Grundy for Arkham City?
Well, we needed a big bad guy, and
You didn't create Solomon Grundy.
No, but he's in the game. And he's Penguin's mystery henchman. We revealed that over the weekend.
Okay.
You know, we just needed a guy who was a big bad guy and really fearsome. And
something comparable to, like, Killer Croc in the first game.
Yeah, and Croc had his moment in the first one, and we didn't necessarily want to repeat that, but... and we thought, who else is out there? And it's like, well, Grundy's a huge challenge for Batman.
And he is Gotham-based.
Very Gotham-based, yeah, going back all the way to the Golden Age.
All right, Kevin Broden asks, this is more of a statement. He says, sorry I didn't see you or any sock monkeys at SDCC this year, but have a great podcast. As a writer, I look up to you.
Oh, wonderful. Nice. Well, that's very nice of him.
Yeah. We're sorry we didn't hook up.
Yeah, Kevin, if you send Paul a direct message with your address, maybe we'll send you a little something.
And also, it's lucky you didn't see me pulling Super Reek off the floor.
Well, there is that. Nasty. Besides, Rashi was home with me, so. Yeah. Jim Coffee Roll says, any thoughts on the new Avatar miniseries Legend of Korra? Korra?
I'll have to sit down and watch it. I can't render an opinion. I haven't seen any of it yet.
Okay. What's the website for the podcast?
www.radiorashi.com.
Hey, Adolfo Gonzalez asks, what is your favorite book, comic, and novel?
Favorite book, comic, or novel? Or and novel?
Comic and novel.
If I had to pick favorite comic book, it would probably be something by Robert Crumb. There are a lot of contenders for that. I don't know. It would probably be more along the line of favorite comic book story. Ongoing comic book. Gosh, I couldn't say. Novel would probably be.
You like the Uncle Scrooge comics an awful lot too.
Scrooge comics.
The old ones. Yeah, those, you like those an awful lot.
Uncle Scrooge is probably way up there. I think I was more influenced by Uncle Scrooge, and then underground comics than I was by whatever was going on in the mainstream when I was growing up. I mean, we're talking late 70s, early 80s, and I love this stuff. And I read, and when I was roommates with Richard Howell and Carol Kalish, I read everything. Like, I would read old Kirby romance comics. I read, the Neil Adams Batman for the first time. I read, the old Lee and Kirby stuff, which at that point was 10 or 15 years old. But it was like a process of looking back and rediscovery. But I always loved Scrooge McDuck, and the undergrounds I discovered by myself in like the early 70s by going into head shops and seeking out, mostly humor comics. And I just bought that Freak Brothers you know, on the bus the other day and was reading all those and enjoying those for the first time in years.
Yeah, novel?
I was just going to say, that sounds like my dad's house. I grew up around Uncle Scrooge comics and Underground comics. That was all that was on his shelves, really.
I think if you grow up more like into humor books, it was more like you would read things like funny animal books, and then you'd get into strip comics and things like Pogo, and then it was you know, Scrooge and Donald Duck and comics and stories, and then it was Underground. So it was Crumb, Freak Brothers, you know, whatever else was happening at that time, whatever else I could get my hands on at that time. And novel, I guess, anything by Steinbeck, I guess. Grapes of Wrath, Canary Row.
And you like the Harry Potter books too a lot.
I like the Harry Potter books. Those are fun.
Yeah.
I mean, but books I read when I was a kid would be like most, I grew up in Steinbeck's backyard, so I, you know, he was like the local literary.
So hero. Much so that actually the last time you were down on Cannery Row, you bought a painting of Doc Ricketts' lab.
That's right. Good old Doc Rick, 800 Cannery Row.
Paul knows the guy who has the key.
Yeah.
He does. You know, the guy who takes care of really? The real, there really is a Doc Ricketts' lab. And
they'll probably...
A friend of Paul's takes care of it.
They'll probably turn it into a tourist attraction someday.
I hope they do.
Well,
not for the traffic, but just to keep the history alive.
Yeah, see it.
Okay.
All right, so Timothy Mabley would like to know if you can help him out. He's got a motion type comic, and the views are suffering on YouTube, and he hopes we enjoy it. I don't know if it's good because we've not yet seen it.
I did, and I already retweeted.
Oh, you did?
I retweeted.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, can Ezra put it up on Radio Rashing?
I will,
I'll give you this page.
Okay.
All right, thank you for retweeting that. All right, good. Well, then there you go. There you go, Timothy. Yes, the answer is yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Matt was failing.
I'm always happy to help.
Yeah, says, is the WB going to release Batman TAS on Blu-ray?
No idea, but
okay.
That sounds like something they would do.
Yeah.
David Earl also wants to know how you feel about Mark Hamill retiring his Joker voice.
He actually tweeted it and said, oh, he misread that. And, you never say never.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nightwing Pones, what is your favorite thing that you wrote for Batman the Animated Series? And if it's Heart of Ice, what is your second fave?
Probably Almost Got Him. That was a really terrific episode. That's one of my favorites.
It's not the Harley and Ivy Go to the Mall episode?
No. The Christmas episode?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Almost Got Him is my favorite.
Almost Got Him is really good. I mean, I like that an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, which is really good.
Which I have never seen.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
When
our niece was here, Calla was here. Well, you guys met her. She was on the podcast. I said, we should probably watch this. And he just got this big Grinch-like smile on his face and said, let's watch mine. It's uncut. And I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we never watched it.
No, we never did.
Still. All right. Twin Manny, any news on Tower Prep? We already answered that. But said, best show ever. So there you go.
Very nice. Thank you. I agree.
Davey Gallagher, what will be the sleeper classics of the DC New 52 number ones? What does that mean? That is so inside.
Well, it's like he's like asking me to play comic book tout and pick a winner there. I don't know.
Pick a winner meaning of the number ones, like which ones should he buy and put in plastic? Is that what he's asking?
I don't know. That is like a racetrack tout. You know, it's like why not put $100 on every horse? You're going to win, you know, at some point.
Maybe. It depends on how wide the distribution is and what the interest is later. You can never really tell with that stuff.
You know, it's like... That's the fear, is you're going to have all these kids in October, November, running into the comic book shop, is going, I got Superman number one, it's worth $1 million. And it's like, no, it's not. This is not the Superman volume two number one. It's, I don't know, I think a lot of it is going to come down to personal taste. It's, I can't say, I mean, obviously, Jim Lee's Justice League, Geoff Johns is writing it, Jim Lee is drawing it, that would kind of be my odds on favor pick for being the hot book, definitely of that week, if not that month. But there's a lot of talent in there, and looks like there's a lot of good stuff. So,
and there's sneak previews out already, so check them out yourself.
Yeah,
there you go.
I don't know.
Make your own bets. That's Paul's answer. Isolane Easy asks, not a question, but we had a 90s cartoon marathon this weekend, and Batman TAS, Tiny Toons, and Animaniacs were all present.
Good for you.
Neener Nina wants to
know. That's a great name.
Yeah, Neener Nina?
Yeah, her name is Janina. It might be Neener Nina, but I'm not. I think it's Nina.
Okay.
Yeah. Favorite costumes, cosplay? Interesting or technically challenging ones? Embarrassing moments? You're not really much of a cosplay guy, but maybe we should talk about the Green Lantern photo Bruce Timm put up in the Warner Brothers office.
That was Halloween. All bets are off.
Oh, do you guys know about that? Did we talk about that on the podcast?
I think I remember hearing it from
you. Oh, my God. Oh, our very first Halloween together, because, you know, we hadn't met until, you know, the year before, late in the year, like December or whatever the year before.
November.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We went to Alex Ross's Halloween party. Now, Alex Ross does Halloween, like we do Halloween.
Yeah.
And when Alex Ross creates a costume, like he was the specter when we went there, he had installed a light in his hood that shone down on his face. He does not screw around. Right. I mean, like, he was the spirit at our wedding and drew the lip prints on his face perfectly and had a suit made. He does not screw around.
In his defense, he does dress up all of his models for his character design. So,
and he takes photographs of them. Mm-hmm. They're all over his office.
Costume.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we stepped up.
So we go, and Paul had a Green Lantern costume made. He was Green Lantern, and I was Zatanna.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back before I knew better. So... anyway, so we went, and the first thing that I did was I walked in, said hello to Alex, and fell on his floor. Help! Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the very first time I met Alex. I was wearing 6.5-inch heels and walked in and fell at his feet. And he was like, oh my, he was like, hello, it says, oh, let me help you up there. So anyway, a picture was taken by Lee, who owns Lee's Comics.
Yes, and that got out on the internet.
And it circulated on the interwebs, and Bruce Timm thought it was so funny that he printed a copy and put it up in the Warner Brothers offices.
Oh yeah, and a week after, Halloween, I'm down in Texas at a convention in Dallas, and I run into, and I'm checking in, and there's Jim Lee at the counter and talking to a few DC people. It's like, hi, how are you? And nice to see you. Yeah, nice to see you too. See you around the convention floor. Bye. And then as I'm walking away, Jim says, "Nice Green Lantern costume, by the way." And I said, "Oh." That made the rounds.
Yes.
Made the rounds. Yeah.
So there's your embarrassing moment, Neener Nina.
Yeah, there you go.
And Neener Niner to you, Paul Dini. Yes. So there we go. Okay. All right, B.R. Russell, this last two. B.R. Russell asks, still any news of Tower Prep is getting renewed? No. Whether it's on CN or another network, not yet, right?
No. Well, CN owns it. They can't. I mean, they could sell it, but I don't think they want to.
Okay.
I have one on our Twitter feed from Ray Rashi. Mr. Begone 1155 is asking, when you're doing the animated series, what were some of the challenges of Mask of the Phantasm and expanding that to a movie?
Hmm, that's a good one.
That was mostly a story that Alan Burnett wanted to tell, and he had in mind he really wanted to do a dark, doomed romance story for Bruce Wayne. And he kind of took the ball and ran with that and really came up and really sat down and wrote, you know, what really could have been a terrific mystery novel and turned it into the outline for the movie. And then he parceled it up among myself, Marty Pasco, and Michael Reeves, and we all took a chunk and ran with it. And then Alan wrote a big chunk of it himself. And we all sort of, split up the scripting duties. But that was really his baby, and he came up with the... with the story for that, and
very good.
It's probably our best movie. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of competition, but I always like that one the best because that was written directly to be a movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said, that really had the guts to be a live action Batman movie. I agree.
Neat. All right, last one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any others? No.
Okay. Oh, the additional on this was, and what's the entire plot of Arkham City? But I don't think that's...
What's the entire plot of Arkham City?
Just say it all in like one
Batman
breath.
Has some trouble.
a bad night for Batman.
How's
Slow
that?
It down and you can...
Batman gets in fights.
Yes.
How's that? Yeah. That's the entire plot. Batman gets in fights.
Batman kicks ass.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you play well. all right, last one. Alex Chung, what was your favorite Comic-Con treasure this year? Alex's was getting a Pia Guerra sketch.
That's nice. You know what? This is my big regret about Comic-Con is I take my sketchbook every year and then nobody ever draws in it. And they're...
Well, last year somebody took it and kept it for like a month. Who was that? Was it Stefan?
Stefan.
Yeah, he did a beautiful job, though.
Yeah, it was beautiful. but, the problem is I'll either... At Comic-Con, for one thing, it's like a 7-mile hike to get to Artist Alley.
Mm-hmm.
And I never
you
even...
You need to get a rascal and put a dragon's head on it like that one dude did.
I never even made it this year.
I got to give props. If you didn't make it to Artist Alley, Deviant Arts was sponsoring it this year, and it was beautiful. They put giant screens up above all the tables showing the different artists that were premiering and their work.
Wow.
Yes.
And was that at the far end of the convention center?
Same place it was last year, but they just really looked great this year.
Wow. Well, you know what I'm going to do is next year I'm going to go down and have a nice leisurely lunch at the barbecue place. Then I'm going to take the
barbecue place where we met Gary Coleman.
That's right.
Remember we saw him listening to his headphones and talked to him at the stop?
Oh, that's right.
That was back when he wasn't dead.
That's right. I forgot about that.
That was tasteful.
Just laugh.
Yeah, it's good.
And then I'm just going to go over, have some ribs, and then take the trolley all the way to the end of the convention center and get off there rather than try and walk it.
That's a good idea.
Smart, man.
Yeah.
That's really smart.
I wish I had been that smart this year but, you know, it's just so long and it's so hard, you know, slashing my way through the crowd.
Get a Segway. Oh, they're not allowed, are they? No. They disallowed them.
And then, and I'll just go in, because so many people I missed. I didn't see anybody at their table. I didn't get any sketches.
You said you didn't even see Serge.
So I saw Serge briefly.
Yeah.
Sergio Aragona's all over the Comic-Con floor.
Yeah.
How you can go through a Comic-Con and not see Sergio is insane.
I know. I took my book to WonderCon, and then people just turned me down one after another. It's like, no, I'm booked. And, you know, I go to Adam Hughes, and it's like, can I get a sketch? No, I'm booked. And it's like,
whoa.
I like drawing the covers for your book, though. And I said, well, I like seeing them, but I wasn't going to get a Zatan out of him that day. So I guess you have to make...
Why don't you call him and just send it to his house?
Well...
It's not as fun, I understand.
I don't know. You know, it's just like whatever process that undergoes getting a sketch now, either you call the artist in advance or send the book or you get them that first day or... Mm-hmm. Or whatever. I think now what they're doing is in advance. It's like, I'm at Comic-Con, you know, give me a commission of what you want and pay a down payment. And
yeah, I think they are. Because I know that, I think Jill Thompson was doing that via Twitter, wasn't she?
Yeah, Scotty Young said on his blog, said, get a hold of me and I'll
do it now. And I'll sit at my booth and sign things and sell things, but I'll be working on your commissions. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them are doing that. I know Bruce Timm does that too. He's got that long list.
Oh, yeah.
And he checks them off and checks them off and checks them off.
We tried this year again. Couldn't do it this year.
Yeah. Well, what, was he booked?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's worth it. You know, it is the Bruce Timm. And he's associated with Conan now. So he's got mass distribution now. So
well, they had the Conan Museum of Modern Art Conan exhibit.
He drove by there.
Yeah, Conan was in the window waving to the crowd. We saw that last night. You know,
I did. Well, you snored through it.
Him where he crashed Bruce's panel.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he in the Green Lantern, and then they showed the CGI. The flaming sea?
Flaming sea. You're so funny. Last night. He wants to watch this thing on Conan, but he was so tired. I mean, we were just like out of it. And he's flipping through the stations, and then he just falls asleep. And I said, may I have the remote? No, I'm watching this. I said, Paul, this is a special on Amy Winehouse in Spanish. Oh, sorry about that. I guess I fell asleep. He goes back to changing channels looking for Conan.
Yeah, but like, we eventually found it. It was fun. and then we went to the, we went to the Dark Knight.
Year one.
Batman Year One, yeah.
And we saw Winnie the Pooh yesterday, which was really good.
Well, that was good
the
too.
New Winnie Pooh is
it
good,
was
huh?
so good. The acting like is excellent. Very sweet. Mm-hmm. The movie was excellent. We used to do Danny Double feature reviews and stuff, and we both really liked that movie.
That was good.
Yes.
I just like seeing, you know, good pencil work up on screen. Mm-hmm. You know,
Eric Goldberg did a beautiful job.
Any animation, any 2D animation, I'm a big fan of.
And they had a lot of harkening back to the old animation with the chalkboard.
Oh, wow.
And the playing style. And the walking over the words where they actually make it like the book is a character. You know, and they walk around the paragraphs.
Oh, now I got to see this.
You have to see it. It's only an hour long.
Oh, great. Oh, I got to see this. Yeah.
It's like an hour and 6 minutes long. And it is just, it's really enjoyable. It's very sweet. And it's the kind of, like, I was watching that and I was thinking, boy, my 4-year-old nephew would really, really enjoy this. And I'm actually tempted to just pre-order it. On DVD, because it's the kind of thing that a kid that age might have trouble just sitting in the theater anyway, but they really made this with those kids that age in mind. It's an excellent, excellent choice, and it was just very well executed.
Mm-hmm. I just hope they get another 2D animated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know.
Well, the way they set it up, it's like that was chapter one of a very thick book.
Well,
so
yeah.
So here's hoping.
Well, Winnie the Pooh's nice, but I think they should just make more movies in 2D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
I agree on that.
Yeah.
Oh,
you've got this whole building over there, you know. Just put them all to work. There's great 2D stuff going. And I think the bloom is off the rose a little bit for 3D. Not necessarily for CGI. That'll always be there, but I think 3D costs a lot more to go and see for an audience.
Yeah.
You know, they jack up the
$14
price.
A ticket.
Yeah, I think originally movie theaters and stuff were hoping to make their money back with that kind of stuff, but people are just getting tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Captain America again in 2D.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh. We saw it in 3D. There was only one moment where I realized it was 3D, but I think it was more the noise because there was a clang and something kind of goes chunk like in your face and you go, oh. And I was like, oh, this is in 3D. Woo. You know, like it didn't even really.
There's a lot of shrapnel exploding and stuff like that. But
yeah, personally, I try to go see the 2D over the 3D.
Mm-hmm. Us too. Mm-hmm. Unless there's something that's really kind of an event that he really wants to see in 3D. It's
like Coraline, I loved going to see in 3D because that's the way it was filmed and intended and everything. Mm-hmm. But all these afterthoughts. Mm-hmm. Eh.
Coraline was scary. I thought it was really scary. I was like, oh.
That's all the time we have for this time for Comic-Con reminiscence and questions. We'll be back next week with lots more entertaining stuff.
Mm-hmm. See you then, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.